Thank you guys for coming tonight. I am very, very glad you're in the room. This is the Marketplace Leadership Breakout Session. I'm not using a mic because I need one, but because we're recording these, so we have them available for leaders that weren't able to come tonight. So it's a little weird because I'm used to being in this room for environments where I'm not using a microphone, so hopefully I won't forget I have it in my hand. But I'm very, very glad you joined us tonight. First of all, thanks for coming to lead. We have been fired up about this night for the past couple of months, knowing that it was going to be inspiring and so much fun. And the way we kicked it off tonight, we're off to a great start. So glad you guys are here. If you didn't get one of the pops yet, apparently, like, they're not popsicles. They're another level, is what I've been told. So anybody confirm? I see people with satisfied looks on their faces. So it's always a good sign. Over the next few minutes, I want to just kind of walk you through. I'm going to share something with you that is a leadership principle that I've used for many, many years, and I think could be helpful for you, whatever your sphere of leadership is right now. I have a big heart for leaders in the marketplace because my experience has been that it can be, it can look great from the outside and be tough on the inside. I think it's the best way I know to put it. So often people think, you know, if you're in a leadership role, that it's sort of a soft, easy, comfortable life. And I suppose it could be if you did it wrong. But if you do it right, it's the opposite of that. It's constantly challenging, constantly stretching. And I think it also, if you do it right, is constantly letting go of yourself and your own desires and needs in order to serve a mission and to serve the people around you. So I'm proud of you for leading and whatever it looks like for you right now, leading in the marketplace. Again, what we want to do tonight is just kind of give you some practical stuff that can help you in that sphere. And here's what I've learned about leadership. It is not a solo activity. And again, I think here's one of the things when you talk about leadership, there are all kinds of models out there and they aren't all good, right? So there are certainly leaders who go lock themselves in their office and issue decisions via email and are never, you know, seen otherwise. But real leadership is not a solo activity. And I think one of the things that makes leadership tough is how much working with people it requires, right? Leadership would be fun if it weren't for all the people. Think about that just for a second. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but the people are the challenge, but the people are also the point. We're developing and inspiring and making the world better for people around us. And one of our core values here, one of the core values of leadership for us at The Journey is a thing called empowerment, which we talk about all the time. And the way we say it is that we don't do ministry alone. We build relationships, we inspire people to live out their purpose, and then we give people opportunities to lead. And my job on a leadership level in our church is that all of our staff and all of our leaders know and live out that principle that we don't do stuff. The stuff that needs to get done is always secondary to the people who need to be developed, right? Everybody understand that? So the task list can never be the most important thing. The task list is the people we are serving and developing and equipping. And that means that if you're going to lead effectively, you got to build people and you have to build teams, all right? Teams are kind of the staple, the secret sauce of great leadership. Jesus exemplified this. He built a team, and I think you could make the case he's the one person who ever lived who didn't need to, right? It's like, hey, I'm going to walk on water. I don't know what you guys are going to do, but apparently I need a team. So he didn't need a team, yet he built one. And it wasn't haphazard. It wasn't an afterthought. It wasn't flippant. He put intentionality into building his team. In fact, if you look at his life and his leadership, which interesting thing about Jesus' life and leadership is he only had about three and a half years of public leadership. And during that time, he built several teams. He built a team of 70. You can read about that in Luke. Sent them out to take his message everywhere. He built a team of 12, the disciples. And then he built an inner circle of three guys, Peter, James, and John, that he got very close with, very connected with. And he didn't just lead to them. He led through them. So if Jesus built a team, I think it stands to reason that there aren't any of us, you know, however close to his leadership that we may think we are, we're at least one notch below, right? And so effective leadership is building teams. And the one thing that Jesus said to his team over and over again, one way or another, was, trust me. Jesus was always saying that, one way or another, trust me. hey, why aren't you trusting me right now? Why do you have so little faith? Don't you trust me? I think about the time when there was a storm. They were all in a boat, his disciples. There was a storm, and Jesus was asleep, and they woke him up. He's like, why don't you have faith? And they're like, what do you mean, why don't we have faith? There's a hurricane. That's why we don't have faith. And he seems genuinely kind of not perplexed, but thinking that, hey, this is you should trust me. So let me just do a quick straw poll, show of hands. As a leader, have you ever felt like you don't have trust on your team? Just show of hands, all right? That's the majority of us. You ever felt like people don't trust you? You ever felt like you don't trust the people? You ever felt like they don't trust each other? So this trust thing is a massive part of effective team building and team leading, and yet it's also such a huge challenge. And one of the things I've found with trust is it takes a long time to build, but it does not take a long time to lose. It's amazing how quickly you can lose it if you don't lead well. I'm not talking about walking on eggshells, because if you have built trust, you can be human and imperfect, but you can't be disingenuous and not have integrity, and because you'll lose trust in a hurry. So a guy named Patrick Lencioni wrote a book a few years ago called 5 Dysfunctions of a Team that is on my top 5 list of books. I'm a reader, and you know, I used to really soapbox about reading, like if you're a leader, you need to read. Now I know there are lots of ways to get information, so you're like, I don't read, I watch, you know, videos or TED Talks or listen to podcasts. But whatever it is, if you don't have something flowing in all the time, you become a pond, and scum grows on the surface of a pond. And scum grows on the surface of a leader's life when they just try to produce out of what they already have and don't allow a steady stream in. So that's my pitch for developing yourself. But if you are like, okay, I like that, I'm going to start, here's a book I'd recommend, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. This is an incredible book about how teams operate when they're healthy and how teams operate when they're not healthy. And Patrick Lencioni, it's not a touchy-feely book. He's very clear. Hey, the purpose of teams is to produce results that matter. Okay, so it's not, some of you may be like type A, and you're like, I don't want to read another book about trust. You're going to make me do trust falls? Nothing's worse than a trust fall, right? If you don't know what a trust fall is, count yourself blessed. Used to be a thing in marketplace leadership. You'd go to these events and these offsites, and you'd fall back into other people's arms, which is the worst. But anyway, it's like, oh, now we have trust. No, we don't. So the purpose of a team is to produce results that matter. And the best way, listen, this is so important. I didn't always understand this early on. The best way to produce results that matter is to be a healthy team. There are just no shortcuts around that for the long term. The health is a prerequisite for ongoing growth and results. Healthy things grow. Unhealthy things eventually stop growing. So the best way to produce results that matter is not to say, hey, we're going to produce results that matter. It's actually to build and shape and form a healthy culture and a healthy team, because where there is health, there will be growth. And again, this applies in any area of leadership that you're in. If you're a middle manager, if you're a CEO, if you're a shift supervisor, if you have 2 people who report to you, if you have 20 people who report to you, the fundamental responsibility of a leader is to build a healthy culture while building a healthy team. So, Lencioni in the book, and it's a very easy book to read, it's written like a story, so it's very, very simple to read, but he says that there are 5 dysfunctions of a team, and I want to walk you through them, and you have the handout, so you can kind of fill in the blanks as we go. Fill in the blanks are for people with ADD, like me, so you're welcome. But he says there are 5 dysfunctions of a team, and it kind of forms this pyramid, and they work chronologically, and so if you don't have, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Anybody, you know, seen that? It's kind of like that. So if you don't have the first one, there's no way you're getting the third one, right? So you got to start at the beginning. And the very first dysfunction of a team, the very first way that teams start out or become dysfunctional, is when there is an absence of trust. So in the bottom of your pyramid, if you want to write absence of trust, that is what's at the base of these 5 dysfunctions of a team. And what that means is that people, it's very simple, okay, none of this is going to be profound, which I hope helps you apply it more quickly, because very simple stuff. But what that means is that safety is a fundamental need for human beings. And not just physical safety, like some of you probably had meetings, depending on where you work, where you feared for your physical safety at moments. Like, is that manager about to go off? Is that employee But beyond that, emotional safety, relational safety, these are fundamental needs human beings have. And we fight or flight if we don't have them, right? And on teams, what happens most often is flight. So people flee. They don't literally leave the room, but they shut down. They put a wall up. They're like, there's no way I'm really going to show my true self. The emotion is fake. It's contrived if it's there at all. Meetings get really boring really fast because there's no real human energy there because the people just don't trust each other. So raise your hand if you've been on a team or in an environment like that, all right? And maybe you're on a great team now, but teams go through these dysfunctions, even the best ones. My team goes through this stuff. And my job as a leader is to go, okay, back to basics, back to health. Where do we need to rebuild the trust? So in these moments, in these seasons, when there's an absence of trust, people don't open up and share their ideas. So that's a sign to look for. If you're in a meeting and people are not sharing a pretty steady stream of insight, innovation, thoughts, ideas, even ones that might not work, then you know there's probably not a baseline of trust, which means ultimately your team's not going to win. Because this is important, you might want to write this down. Teams only win when the best idea wins. And the best idea is not always the leader's idea. The team that I lead it's not Mark's idea wins, it's best idea wins. And to get a culture where you're getting the best ideas to the surface, you have to have trust. So each of these dysfunctions has a byproduct, like what results from that. And in this case, it's kind of a big word, invulnerability. So the word in and then vulnerability. If you want to write that in the blank next to that, the bottom of the pyramid. And that's a fancy way of saying people just refuse to get vulnerable. They refuse to be honest about their emotions, honest about their opinions, honest about their ideas on the team. So you get a lot of robots, right? So then, how do you counteract that? I want to share for each of these, I'm going to give you like the main way that I've learned as a leader and the main way we at The Journey try to offset these dysfunctions and build the healthy side of them. And then I want to give you an action step. So the main way we build trust at The Journey, if you flip your handout over, we got five of these for you. The first one is how to build trust. We know and understand each other's strengths and weaknesses. We know and understand each other's strengths and weaknesses. So our team does the hard work of getting to know each other. You can't have trust with people you don't know. Now, here's what I know. Some of you are going, oh, that's easy in church world because all you guys do all day is you hold hands, sing kumbaya, pray, Holy Spirit comes, and everything's good, and there are never any problems or disagreements, and the church just grows, and it's just easy. Uh-huh. So ask some of our staff to get, first make sure you have trust with them because then they'll be honest with you. But the reality is we have to constantly do this. I think about the people on my team a lot because it's my job to. And I'll have people on my team sometimes say, hey, I know you're busy. Could I get some time with you? And I am busy. And I know sometimes I have to work on not coming off so busy, like pretending I'm not busy. I was in a meeting today. I was like, okay, let me pretend I'm not busy. Just be very present. And it's hard work for me sometimes. But I've had people say, hey, I know you're busy. And I'll stop them and say, you are my job. Do you understand that? You are my primary responsibility. Like, whatever you've got that you think needs my attention, it needs my attention because you are my job. My tasks are not my job. My messages I write for the weekend are not my only job. You are my job. And so we know and understand each other's strengths and weaknesses, which means we have to make effort to get to know each other. We talk about this at least once every 4 to 6 weeks on the team that I lead directly. Our priorities, number one, to know and understand each other's strengths and weaknesses. And we will often in meetings go, and by the way, very simple thing with this, if everything goes to the person whose job it is on the org chart, you don't have a trust-based team. Because on a trust-based team, the ball goes to whoever is most likely to get it down the field on that play. Now, it may be the person who's in the box on the org chart, but where there's trust, a team can easily pivot and go, okay, Philly special, Nick Foles, you're going to catch the ball. You're welcome, sports reference. All right. For those of you who know me, you know that's a big deal. So here's your action step, okay? Over the next 48 hours, pick two people on your team and list what you know of their strengths and their weaknesses. Now, it's not a time to bash them. When I say weaknesses, I'll be like, oh, I hate her attitude. That's not what I mean. I mean, what are the things that they're unlikely to succeed at? What are the things they're likely to succeed at? Things they're unlikely to succeed at. And then use that as a lens. Review it before your next one-on-one or your next meeting. Okay? Here's the second dysfunction. Fear of conflict. So where there's an absence of trust, the last thing people want to do is disagree. And as a leader, you need them to. Now, you don't necessarily want them to, but you need them to. Because remember, best idea wins, and the best ideas get hashed out and fought over in a healthy way, but fought over. So here's an example. When there are a lot of yeses, people don't open up and share their misgivings, so we don't win. So if you're in meetings where ideas do come to the surface, but then everybody's like, oh, that's a good idea. Or they don't say anything. Or they write, and you think they're writing what a good idea it is. Or they're on their smartphone, or which I have a little cage now for my meetings with a lock on it. And I'm like, put your smartphones in, and we lock it up, and we sit it in the center of the table. It's great. You should try it. Your people will love you. So you think they're really engaged, but actually they're not. And so here's what happens. No misgivings come up in the meeting. You know where they come up? Later in the hallway. That's the worst idea ever. I don't even know why John is in this position. Yeah, I know. I'm thinking of leaving. Well, where was that in the meeting? It wasn't there because there's a fear of conflict. So when people don't share their misgivings and there's a fear of conflict, here's the byproduct. You get artificial harmony. You get smiles and nods in the room and stab you in the back with a dagger in the hallway. All right? So there's fake agreement. So here's how we overcome this here. And this is hard work and it takes guts. But we engage, that's a key word, we engage in constructive ideological conflict. What does that mean? Well, let me ask you first, how many by a show of hands would say you're good at conflict? Raise your hand if you're good at conflict. Okay, so we have a few of us. How many say you're okay, like you can do it if needed? How many of you are like, I hate it, hate it? All right, a few of us like, I hate it, I don't want it. So all kinds of personalities come into play. And each personality has challenges. If you're good at conflict, you might be causing too much of it. Because you're like, I'm good at, watch this, let's have a conflict. Check this out. If you're bad at conflict, you're probably avoiding it and the team's losing out and your leadership's losing out. And eventually your leadership will stall, by the way. Leaders who don't know how to have regular, good, healthy conflict always hit a lid in their leadership growth. Because certain levels of leadership just require that we're willing to wade in. But you don't have to enjoy it to be good at it, okay? You don't have to be like, oh, good, a conflict. That might be a little weird, to be honest with you. But here's what I do here, and it's a discipline, and I teach the leaders who report to me, I insist on it. You don't get to be in the room with me if you do not engage in conflict. So, and I've had these conversations so many times. I've had people I've brought in the room for meetings, and they're there like 6-8 weeks, and I'm not... At first, I'll be gentle about it, but I'm like, hey, I want you to engage more. Do you really agree with all 37 decisions we've made over the past 6 weeks? So if you do, you probably shouldn't be in the room because you don't have anything to add. We got it covered clearly. If you don't, you probably shouldn't be in the room because you're not bringing it to the table. So you want to handle that gently. That's the 32nd view. But again, I insist on it. We are going to engage in constructive ideological conflict. Now you say, well, what about safety? You said it was important to be safe, and conflict makes me feel unsafe. Two words make this kind of conflict safe. Number one, it's constructive. It's never destructive. We don't do conflict that tears down. We do conflict that builds up. And that can be done. It can be done. Just ask any couple who's been to a good marriage counselor. You can do constructive. It always starts out destructive, but the counselor's job is to say, okay, let's rephrase that, right? And then number two, it's ideological, so it's never personal. It's about the idea. So here's an action step over the next week for you and your leadership. Have some conflict. the healthy kind. The next time you feel like, okay, we've talked about five things and everybody has just rubber stamped every single one of them, pause for a moment and go, hey, I feel like we need to kind of press this a little bit more. And then call the person out you have the most relational equity with. Jill, you said something a couple of months ago that just makes me wonder if you might have a different view on this. Talk about that. And one of my favorite tools, by the way, as a leader, is awkward silences. I use them all the time. Several guys in the room are in a J group that I lead for business leaders. And now that we've finished the semester, I can tell you, like at least three times this past semester, I would do an awkward silence. Because I'd asked a question, and I was just waiting. And somebody's going to fill that awkward silence. There's somebody in the room who can't stand it, and they're your new best friend. Because then they get a conversation going. Is that making sense to everybody? So have some conflict. And if you're not the leader, start it gently so that you're still employed. But have some conflict. Here's a third dysfunction, lack of commitment. So remember that these build on each other. And whenever there isn't good, healthy conflict, what happens is nobody fully commits. People 70% commit, 80% commit, 90% commit, but they don't 100% commit. And how can they? Because they weren't really heard. We were designed, human beings, the way we're designed relationally is we can't fully commit to things that we haven't been heard when it comes to our view. We don't need, those of us that are psychologically healthy, we don't need the decision to be made the way we want it to be made. But we do need to be heard. Everybody tracking with me? We need to know that we can engage in the process and that we can get our view on the table. And that way, even if our view isn't the one that leads to the ultimate decision, when we walk out of the room, we're unified, we're all on the same page. But when you don't have good, healthy conflict and people aren't really heard, you get this lack of commitment. And so how many of you experienced this? What did we decide in that meeting again? You ever had that moment? Was Sally gonna, or was Henry, or what? Weren't we supposed to have that by last Tuesday? Have you had those moments? Man, those moments for me are like the kiss of death on a team. And Rob's chuckling because I chase them down. That's when we are gonna get crystal clear. Because that lack of commitment is, it hurts a team and it hurts morale. No one wants to be on a team long-term that doesn't have clarity and that doesn't have everyone's buy-in. So the byproduct of lack of commitment is ambiguity. So it's not clear. There's a fog over everything. There may be a lot of energy, but there's no clear direction. So here's how we increase commitment on our team. We make and execute decisions. We make and execute decisions. We say, well, duh, that's what all teams do. You would be surprised how many fireside chats teams have and never landed a real decision. Here's how you know you've made a real decision as a team. Four things. I'm going to give them to you super quick. Paint lines, guidelines, deadlines, and butts on the line. Let me break it down. Paint lines means the vision's clear. Okay? We've painted the lines on the road. We know we're in this lane, not that lane. We know where we're going, the direction we're headed. So leader's job, make sure the vision's clear. I never want my team walking out of the room about to execute something that they don't know exactly why they're executing it. Because I know the commitment will falter if they don't have a clear why. So we'll painstakingly stay in the room sometimes and get the vision clear. Paint lines. Guidelines is how are we going to do it? So clarity around. And by the way, as you grow in leadership, more and more your job is to provide the why. The people that you serve, their job is to provide the how. If you're always telling people how to do their job, that's very demotivating. You got to give them the vision and let them feed you back the how we're going to do it. Deadlines is when are we going to do it by? So what's the date? And then butts on the line, who's responsible ultimately? Who in this room is the place where the buck stops? Okay, by Tuesday, we're going to have the report on how many people have, you know, purchased these widgets and and Sally's the one who's going to do it, and it's very clear why we're doing it, because widgets are very important to our future. You know, having that clarity is so key. So action step over the next 2 weeks, leave 5 to 10 minutes at the end of the next meeting that you lead. And again, that could be with one person, 10 people, 20 people, 50. Leave 5 to 10 minutes at the end to recap the deliverables. It's such an important discipline. Just clarity around paint lines, guidelines, deadlines, butts on the line. I'm going to give you the next two super quick because I have not managed the clock well. So here they are. The fourth one is avoidance of accountability. So fourth tier up on the pyramid is avoidance of accountability. So when there's a lack of commitment, people throw each other under the bus. So if you have a lot of beep, beep, beep going on in your organization, you know you've got this dysfunction. So what does that look like? It looks like, well, if Gary would have had what I needed to me on time, I would have finished the project. It's Gary's fault. Never liked that, Gary. That is an avoidance of accountability. And this is another thing that I just relentlessly chase down. And by the way, that means I have to model it. Sometimes you get in the leader seat and you think you've earned the right to pass the buck. And nothing could be further from the truth. So you got to model high accountability and then lovingly demand high accountability of the people that you lead. The byproduct of avoidance of accountability is low standards. So that means that the excellence level drops, the quality of what's being done drops, the culture begins to deteriorate. So here's how we ensure accountability. We hold each other accountable for behaviors and actions. Behaviors and actions. Actions, that's the obvious one. Behavior is trickier. Behavior is body language. Behavior is a sarcastic comment that just didn't feel right. Leaders, your job after the meeting that stuff happens in is to follow up and find out why it happened and what's going on. Can't let that stuff just continue to exist. So, and now I love this because now my team does it back to me. So if I'm having a rough day and, you know, I just don't seem to be fully present or something, I know one of them's going to pop in the office. You okay? I'm like, I taught you that, didn't I? Man. Yeah, I should have owned that moment better. Here's what's going on. I'm going to get it together. So that follow-up, and by the way, that shows people we care. If I can get away with stuff in a meeting you lead, I know you don't really care about me. Because if you really cared about me, there's no way you would let that stuff just slide. And you're not chasing me down just to beat me up. You're chasing me down to find out what's going on that I manifested that behavior. So here's an action step over the next month. Have some accountability conversations on your team. Who's that person in those meetings who's always has a wisecrack? It's like it's funny, but it's not. You know what I mean? Like people laugh uncomfortably. It's like, that's funny, but it's not funny. Man, so I work with type A's, and I'm a type A, and I manage the snarkiness level. And sometimes I'm the culprit. I'll just be honest with you. But there are times when it's like, okay, guys, I feel like we've gotten just a little bit punchy. Dial back. I'll lead the way. Let's get back, get focused, all right? Last one is inattention to results. So this just means stuff doesn't get done, and it doesn't get done well when it does get done. And the byproduct of this is status and ego, so everybody's in it for themselves. Everybody's in it for their position, their reputation, their paycheck instead of the team. Here's how we focus on results here. We figure out what matters most, and we measure it. So we're pretty relentless about that. Like, can't measure a million things, so figure out the things that matter most. Measure them, lean in on them, keep everybody focused on them, dial into what's going on in those areas, and don't let egos drive the organization or the team. And if you're the senior leader like I am, start with your ego, because yours is massive, because you're a senior leader. I envisioned a more rousing response from that, but it's all right. It's still true. It's still true. So submit it to Jesus and submit it to the team and lead with humility. All right? Okay, we're going to wrap up in the next 1 minute. Here we go. Here's how you can put this in action. I gave you some action plans in the marketplace. So on this last one, what one thing, if it changed over the next 90 days, would have the biggest impact on everything else? Figure out what that is for your team, because that's what matters most, so you can start measuring it. And then lastly, all of you are in the room because you lead in the marketplace, and I want to take these last 40 seconds and invite you to be in leadership here. And let me look at you. Can't look you all in the eyes because you're on different sides of the room. But let me, best I can, look you in the eyes and tell you, I need you. I can't lead this church without you. And if God's given you a leadership gift, I love you. You are responsible to use it for something that makes a difference. So lead a group here. Get on a team here. Your next step's to go through the growth track if you haven't done that yet. And find your purpose and your part on this team and begin serving and making a difference. All right? Let me pray over us, and then we'll switch gears. Why don't we just stand together real quick? Thank you guys for coming to this breakout. Hope it's been helpful for you. Say a word of prayer, and we'll go. Father, thank you for the opportunity, the privilege, the responsibility to lead. It's not easy, but we know that you've called us to it. And God, whether we are leading in a large organization, a small organization, whether the place where we're leading is a place that is open to our faith or seems closed to it, we know that you are guiding us, you're leading us, and we want to represent you, Jesus. More than anything, we want to represent you in our leadership. Give us the humility to build trust on our teams and to start that by making sure that we stay in a relationship of trust with you. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, guys. Thanks for coming. See you in the auditorium.